Blog Talk Radio.
Again to another exciting episode of Dubwise Talk. I am Judah Dara, your host, and I am so elated, so pleased to have as our very special guest this morning, this afternoon, this evening, wherever you are in the world, the incomparable, passionate, very highly talented, beautiful sister. Her name is Rashida Marie Strober, and she will be presenting some of her perspectives on the dark-skinned women's plight in this world, But before we do that, we're going to hear this announcement, and we will be right back with Sister Rashida.
Greetings, Aquava. Unan Imports. Unan Imports. Unan Imports. They are located at 6971 North Sheridan Road, Chicago, Illinois, 60626. This two-room garden metal shop specializes in arts and crafts, body care products, and clothing, mostly from Kenya and West and Central Africa. They also specialize in authentic hand-carved wood masks that have the spirit infused in them, alongside the bands made of kente cloth and knit Rastafarian taps and carved wood jewelry. The body products include several kinds of pure, unrefined shea butter, as well as black soap made from the ashes of leaves, bark, and cocoa pods, mixed with shea butter or palm oil, then cured, which is noted for its deep cleansing properties. Aside from that, Unan Imports exudes an ambiance that is one to remember. Do yourself a favor. Take some time and go over to Unan Imports, located at 6971 North Sheridan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60626, and see who I call Doc, Brother Al Unan. You'll be glad you did.
And we are black. We are black again with the beautiful and the highly talented Rashida Strober. Let's receive her with a gigantic yay. Greetings, sister. Greetings, beloved.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you, beloved?
I'm awesome. I'm awesome.
Oh, we know that. We know that from the get-go. Let's talk about, first of all, beloved, where were you born?
I was born and raised in St. Petersburg, Florida. Mm-hmm. Yep. I lived in Houston, Texas when I was real little for a while. But primarily I was born and raised in St. Petersburg, Florida. So, yep.
See, is that your home now, Florida?
Yes. St. Petersburg, Florida.
I see. Must be a beautiful town.
Mm-hmm. You know what it is? It's one thing I can say about St. Petersburg, it's very clean. It's one of the cleanest places, like, ever, that I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of places in the United States, but I like St. Petersburg because it's very clean.
I see. And the crime rate is very low. I never heard any criminal statistics coming out of St. Petersburg.
I'm not really up on what the actual statistics are, but what I can say is primarily the crime rate is pretty low if you compare it to, like, you know, bigger cities and stuff like that. But we have had our share of problems in the black community here, but, you know, overall it's lower than what it would be in comparison to, say, like, a big city.
Yes. Well, let's talk about your art now. When you were young, what was art like in your home while growing up? What kind of contributions did art play in your early development?
Oh, wow. That's interesting that you asked that question, because there was no art in my home. It wasn't a thing that was encouraged. It was actually when I was at school where it was encouraged, and in a way it was encouraged at church through you know, like Christmas plays and stuff like that. So it was, the arts was an outlet for me as an escape for what I was going through at home, if that makes sense.
Oh, I see.
So,
yeah, it does make sense. It does make sense.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to reflect on art growing up in my home, and there was music played on the stereo. In those days, they called it a hi-fi, and my mother used to play some music on the hi-fi, but then she got sanctified, and all of that music stopped, and So the hi-fi lay dormant until we became teenagers, and then we began to listen to various artists. But she did, they did listen to gospel on Sunday mornings. So that was about the extent of art until my father bought a piano home in our home. But so you say you were having a little bit of challenges in your home?
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of African-Americans go through, you know, poverty. And my father and my mother was not together, namely the issue of poverty and that kind of thing, and that can weigh heavily on any child,
yes,
as it did. So, yeah.
Mm. So, do you have any sisters and brothers?
Oh yeah, I have. I have five brothers. I have five brothers on my mother's side. I have sisters, but I did not grow up with them. So I don't really like know them. But I have on my mom's side, I have five brothers. Mm-hmm.
So basically you were alone, you were a single child growing up then, huh?
Well, I was the only girl in a bunch of five boys.
Oh, I thought you didn't grow up with them. Oh, okay.
No. What I was saying was I have, you know how your father and your mother isn't together. So my mom, she had five or six kids from her. So I grew up with my mom and those children. But my dad, he had children from another relationship. So
yes.
I did not grow up with those children, and those children happened to be girls. So I grew up with on my mom's side with just the boys.
I see.
So, yeah.
So now, you growing up with all these boys, that kind of made you tough, huh?
You know what? It did. Yeah, me and my youngest brother, we used to, you know, I used to hang out with him a lot and play with him a lot when we was little, and you know, climb trees, and I would follow him around, make mud pies, and you know, I was a little bit rough and tumble growing up around all those boys. Yep.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds like a wonderful time. All right, so let's talk about you were saying that your outlet in art was primarily in church and in school. So which one do you want to talk about first, the church or the school?
I prefer talking about school because that's really, to be honest, that's really where everything was really, really honed. So it really started to develop as a serious talent while I was in school.
Mm-hmm. So is that where
that's
you
why,
found
you know, that's why I love the arts.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So that's where you found your artistic voice in school?
Yeah. I really started seriously getting into acting in middle school. I would do plays, and I was winning all types of awards and everything. And so it was wonderful because, like I said, my home life was not good. It was never good. And, you know, school provided through the arts. That's why I really appreciate the arts and school systems, and they should keep the arts there and put all kinds of money behind it because it can really save a child's life, and it can save your life as you grow up and you face challenges. And you realize that, hey, this is something that I can do, that I'm good at, that I love, that I enjoy. And then most importantly, I found out later on in life that you can use your art to change the world.
Exactly.
To project the change that you want to see in the world.
Exactly, beloved. I was just thinking of that, and you extrapolated that from my consciousness because art serves so many purposes, and one of its main purposes is to enlighten the world, to bless the world. And unfortunately, the art perspective from the black in this hemisphere has become less art and more, I don't know what to call it. It's not art. I'm talking about the music, the so-called music,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote. It's not art at all. It's run by a bunch of thugs and devil worshipers. And unfortunately, the world uses that as a barometer to judge the rest of us here in this hemisphere. What are your perspectives
exactly.
on that?
Yeah, I agree. Totally. The art
through the media and through movies and those mediums and music as well, an agenda has definitely been put in place. And they these people that are behind this, they know that people like to be entertained. They know that people like to have some type of escape from their daily existence. And that gives them a chance to further their agenda.
Yes.
And to put out all these things in the world that are brainwashing and that could be very damaging to children, to adults, and just to, you know, I'm concerned about black people, to our black psyche. And so we have to be very careful because it's very dangerous and it's very delicate and it's very powerful in terms of how we use this medium. Absolutely.
Yes, it is, beloved. I totally agree. Now, let's talk about some of the roles that you played while in school. Which roles that you played that really stood out, that resonated with you?
Oh, my God. Well, actually, there was two. For one, at a very young age, I had a consciousness of this, of what I call dark skin mental abuse, even though I wasn't able to articulate it, but I was conscious of that something wasn't right. So I remember I was in a play called The Pirates of Penzance, and they've had me playing the captain. And at that, even at that, I think I was must around like 13 or 14, I was like, you know, why do I have to play a captain? I saw the masculinity in that, and I thought it was degrading in a sense, but at the same time, I wanted to perform, and it was like, okay, I'll go, and everybody was like, oh, you're so good, and so I was like, okay, I'll play this role. And then I remember having another part in Peter Pan, and I forgot what part it was. Oh, I know what it was. I wanted to play some part I wanted to play, but they gave it to a white girl. And they, even though I was more talented than her, it was, I could clearly see that it was based on, you know, these social norms of race that, you know, everybody operates around. And so even at that age, and then so that was the bad experience. And then a good experience, I remember they had gotten me an acting coach, my own special acting coach. And she, this African-American woman, she would come and she would work with me every week. And she had me do a monologue where I was playing a lost daughter trying to reconnect with my mother who had left so many years ago. And that piece was so powerful. It was so powerful. I took that piece to the Thespian Festival and ended up winning the Superior Award that year. And it was awesome, which resulted in a scholarship that was given to Ruth Eckert Hall. And so that was like one of the greatest highlights that I ever had in school. That's why I said school was like the place where the skill and talent was really honed and developed. So, you know, that was a great. And I actually saw this acting coach when I went and auditioned for a play over in Tampa. I saw her, and she didn't remember who I was. I never forgot her face. And she's like, oh, my God, you remember me? Yeah, I remember you. How could I forget? But, it was. This was like about 3 years ago. It was awesome. It was awesome. And,
That's a very powerful story, that role that you played so many years ago. I don't want to say how many, but you played.
Oh, you can. Totally.
you played that role, and it actually afforded you a scholarship. And what college did you go to?
Yeah, actually, this was when I was like in middle school. I had gotten a theatrical scholarship to study with different Broadway acting coaches and that kind of thing from Ruth Eckert Hall at the time. And I was, my mother, because she wasn't involved and really all together there, I ended up not being able to go because it was too late. She had to sign the paperwork. She didn't sign it off, and they had a runner-up. So this person ended up getting the scholarship, and I didn't. So I lost out on that. But eventually, you know, as my life progressed, I had a lot of issues going on where I ended up dropping out of school, ended up getting my GED, and then ended up eventually enrolling at the University of South Florida and getting a master's degree in political science, which has nothing to do with some people will say nothing to do with the performing arts, but I mean you can find ways to link it up. So,
everything is connected, you know,
yeah,
beloved.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. We are here, ladies and gentlemen, with the highly talented and the most beautiful dark-skinned sister you want to rest your eyes upon. Her name is Rashida Strober. Rashida Strober. And we are brought to you by we are brought to you by Lalibela's Ethiopian Restaurant. They are located at 5633 North Ashland Avenue here in Chicago, Andersonville. And for the finest cuisine and African dining, you want to go to Lalibela's Ethiopian Restaurant and speak with the owner, Samson, and his lovely wife, the hostess, Heru. You'll be so glad that you did, and you'll thank me the next time you see me. And we are brought to you by Popcorn Haven. They are conveniently located on the southwest side of Chicago at 111th and Cicero. And they have, now buckle your seats, this business has 500 flavors of popcorn, from coconut to chocolate chip, you name it, they got it. Do yourself a favor, have your snack over at Popcorn Haven. You'll be so glad that you did. They are located once again at 111th and Cicero. And we are black with the most beautiful Rashida Strober. Now, Rashida, let's talk about the interim between high school and college. What was going on at that time that tried to derail you?
Oh my God, it's very loaded. A lot of stuff. Like I said, I came from a very impoverished background. As a result, I ended up homeless, and having to deal with all the difficulties that came along with that. And so, I would say for a period from around 14 to I want to say around 18. It was a period of a lot of chaos and a lot of trying to figure my way around in the world and trying to get it together.
You had did you have any adults that you could respect and get some guidance from?
You know, that's when I was in school, that's one thing I talked about in my book, about having to take control and be responsible for yourself, because one of the things that I learned was when I was in school and I had those caring adults, which were primarily in school, I had one teacher, Mrs. Everett, she's passed away now. She, beautiful, dark-skinned woman that really believed in me and really loved me, and she was really, really my biggest inspiration, to be honest. And when I had to start moving around from place to place, and I discovered that every adult didn't care. That people had agendas, and people weren't interested in taking care of, another human being, having another mouth to feed. And I discovered that the world could be a very cold, brutal place.
Wow.
And so I discovered that, if I was going to ever not become a statistic, I was going to have to do it on my own and step up to the plate and take responsibility and fight my way to wherever it is that I want it to be. And so I would say outside of school, to be honest with you, I cannot really say that there was a lot of direction from caring and responsible adults. At that time, my father, my mother was 23 and my father was 53 when I was born. So there was a huge age gap there, and he was older as I was, getting older. And so he was kind of sickly, and he couldn't really help to take care of me the way that I needed.
Yes.
So I had to kind of step up to the plate and handle it myself. So
yes.
Always been my attitude. Even to this day, I have to simmer down and realize, hey, take the help when people are helping you, because I was so used to just helping myself and fighting for what it is I wanted on my own that can be kind of detrimental in some ways. But I had to just kind of back up and say, okay, let me take help from people, and let me accept it. But,
yes.
Yeah, I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Very aptly, beloved. All right, so now what was the ignition to make you write your first book?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And the name of your first book, tell us about that.
Actually, it's A Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge, which was originally a play. I just recently finished up the book this year, but it was a play that I wrote back in 2006. And people kept asking me, hey, do you have a book version or do you have a DVD? And I didn't have it. And so I took some time off from performing the play and decided to write the book version. So technically, A Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge is the first book. But then at the same time, I was actually writing How to Be the Hottest Dark-Skinned Chick on the Planet. This was about, I began writing that book about a year and a half ago, and I finally got it done. And that is like the real deal in terms of book, because I wanted to talk about my life experience and what I went through being through the eyes of a dark-skinned woman and how to navigate through those difficulties and pull yourself up and keep on going. That is the most important thing, because I see a lot of people, they make excuses about why they can't do this and why they're in this situation when the secret, the big secret is just to get up, dust yourself off, and keep going. And so that's what the book is about. It's a motivational book for dark-skinned women and girls.
Indeed, beloved. Indeed. I totally agree with your energy. It had to be a divine inspiration, because as you depicted your early childhood and your early adulthood, it didn't seem to be the most splendid experiences. So I have a feeling that the Most High had to make some concessions for you to make your way to show you. What is your connection with the Most High?
Oh, I grew up in a church, in a Pentecostal church. So, you know, I love God. I believe in God. I also, at times, would go to the mosque with my father. My father was a Muslim. So at times, I would go to the mosque with my father. And so I went back and forth between, you know, the mosque and the Pentecostal church. So my love for God is very strong.
Yes.
My faith in God is very strong.
Yes.
And I believe that God helped those that helped themselves.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You are a very wise woman to be as young as you are. I if I didn't have this mic in my hand, I would have an exemplary spirit, and our young sisters, our sisters should pay attention to women such as you. You definitely are a beacon for our people, and I'm proud to have you on my show. Now, let's talk about your engagement. When was the first time you had a performance doing The Dark-Skinned Woman?
Oh, the first time was at the Royal Theater. Let me see. I had been doing readings of the play itself and not the performance. At the library and at churches in the city where I live, St. Petersburg. So that was like around 2010-ish. And then from there, I produced the very first actual production. That was at the Atlanta Black Theater Festival, the first production, and then went on to University of South Florida and several other venues. And I have just been, I've been performing it. But the Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge is really the sequel to a play that I wrote when I lived in L.A. in 2006 called The Ice Cream Lady Dream. And The Ice Cream Lady Dream was about my struggle to hold on to my dream of becoming an actor. And I had a couple of protagonists in the story who told me I was too ugly and too black and nappy-headed to be an actor and I was not going to make it. And when I was performing that show, I noticed that the people, they really took to that those characters and the interplay between the main characters, Tandis and CeeDee, the protagonist. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to expound on that dynamic, and that's why I decided to write Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge. So,
great.
Yeah.
That's a good story, beloved. It reminds me, somewhat of a previous guest I've had on my show. I think it was last year now. And she's a dark-skinned, beautiful queen such as you. And she studied music. And her teacher told her to don't play. I think she wanted to play the piano. She said, no, I don't want you to try out for the piano. I want you to try out for the trombone. Now, this is a dark-skinned little girl. She says, I want you to try out for the trombone. And the girl says, why? And the teacher flatly says to her, because you got long arms and big lips.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. But you know what? She turned that energy around and made herself an international star. So if she can
awesome.
Do it, we all can do it.
That will, is awesome.
Yeah, they will do whatever they can to dissuade us from and to get us off of our square. But I applaud you, beloved. At this time, we're going to take a quick break and listen to one of my originals called Her Scent. And we'll be right back with the most beautiful sister you want to see. And perhaps she will bless us with a reading from her play. All right. This is Her Scent. Code 773 caller, one of your biggest fans. Area code 773, are you there?
I am here.
Present
Rashida,
your question to
Glenn. I'm sorry.
You may present your question.
I just wanted to, I just wanted to say, Rashida, in the short time I've known you, I've become one of your biggest supporters. You've captured our hearts, and I just wanted to encourage you to keep up the good work.
Thank you. What's your name? Who is this?
My name's Glenn.
Thank you.
It's your buddy Glenn from Facebook.
Thank you. How you doing? Thank you so much.
Great.
I appreciate that. What was that?
I just wanted to say, you know, just again, just keep up the good work.
I will. I will never stop. And I appreciate your support. I thank you so much. God knows I appreciate people like you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in, brother. And please follow the show. Just click the follow button at the end of the show. When it's time to listen to it again, you can click that, and we can use just statistics, as easy for me to say. We can use your statistics highly. Now, Sister Rashida, are you prepared at this time to give us a small rendition from your work?
Sure, absolutely.
Would you like to set it up for us?
Yeah, I want to talk about first of all, there's six characters in the play. Because it's a one-woman show, I had to cut it down to me, and I'm playing all the characters. I cut it down to five characters. But there's one particular character. Her name is Delphine Hogleback. And because of her experience from high school, or from elementary school all the way up to, you know, college, she has pretty much grown to hate herself as a dark-skinned woman, and she has grown to hate black men. And she's what I call her, she's a black racist. And she ended up marrying a white man, and her daughter is biracial. And one of the scenes from the play is where the audience is getting a window into this sort of rite of passage discussion that she's having with her biracial daughter when her daughter brings home a black boy, particularly a dark-skinned black boy. And so she's projecting a lot of what she's experiencing and what she's feeling onto her daughter, and she also admits that she wants to be her daughter in terms of how she looks. That she really doesn't want to be dark-skinned, even though she walks around wearing, you know, Afrocentric clothes and, you know, the head wraps and all this stuff. It's really a cover-up for what she really wants to be. And so it's kind of where it's an expose. She's admitting all these things to her daughter and trying to keep her daughter from ever dealing with a black man or a black boy.
Rush.
And later on, a black man. So that's Delphine.
Before you proceed, I'd just like to interject and say, you have a twisted, convoluted mind, but it is beautiful. Go on.
You know, the thing is, it is that the play itself is like, it's a real, honest, raw play. I mean, when you're dealing with the arts, we're dealing with real human emotions.
Yes.
Can't find your Barbie. That's my daughter in the background. My daughter Lauren. When you're dealing with the arts, you're dealing with human emotions and real people, and so you have to be real and honest about the things that have happened to these people, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because that's human. That's how human beings are. So you can't, you know, that's just who she is. It's her makeup, and so I wanted to like really bring her story to light, so that people could see this is the development of how somebody grows up. They experience dark skin discrimination, beauty discrimination, and then they grow up and they internalize it and they project it onto their children. And then it could get passed on from generation to generation, and that's why we have this thing called colorism. So, yeah. Hello?
Yeah, we're ready.
I didn't lose you, did I?
No, we're here. We're ready.
Oh,
just
okay.
Say thank you when you're done. All right, go on.
Oh, no. Your black ass won't take my daughter anywhere. Close the door. Do it now. Sit down. It's time you understood what I went through. And that's
That's how Delphine starts off the conversation with her daughter. Oh my God.
Let me ask you.
Oh yeah.
Are you planning to come to Chicago and perform one day?
Yeah, you know, what I'm doing right now, because, you know, I'm pretty much self-financing the production since I started. I'm just going from city to city, like, slowly. So, I've done Atlanta. This will be, like, the third time I've done Atlanta, but people wanted me to come there again, so I'm going. So then the next city, I'm talking to somebody right now about bringing it to New York. And so I plan on hitting all the major African American market in the United States. It's a slow progression, but it's coming along slowly but surely. And then, of course, internationally. So,
of course,
yeah,
definitely. I can see you being a huge success in Africa and in the Caribbean. We need you, and we are so honored to have you amongst us in this land of chaos at this time. But you know, time is now just about expended. So kind of give your contact information and where you can be found performing the next time you perform.
For sure. You can go to my website, darkskinisbeautifulcampaign.com, and on that website, if a person wants to join the campaign. Okay, hold on 1 second, Lauren. If a person wants to join the campaign, they can just sign up, and then I'll send them a free copy of my book, How to Be the Hottest Dark Skin Chick on the Planet. And then I'm going to be in Atlanta on December 12th. There's going to be two shows, one at 1 p.m. and one at 7 p.m. On December 12th, that's on a Saturday, and it's going to be at the Coconut Kitchen and Lounge, and that's in Norcross, Georgia. But all the information, if you go onto Facebook, because I have so much stuff going on constantly, if you go onto Facebook, the event should be there. It's under A Dark Skin Woman's Revenge Hits Atlanta. And again, it's at the Coconut Kitchen and Lounge. And I believe that address is 6045 Norcross Tucker Road in Norcross, Georgia. And so, and people can just get their tickets from Eventbrite. All you have to do is go to Eventbrite and type in A Dark Skin Woman's Revenge. But there is limited seating, so the tickets, they're going to go fast, so you better get your tickets now. What else? I'm also Saturday, I'm going to be doing – I do online dark skin conferences, speaking about different dark skin issues. So on this Saturday, I'm going to be doing a dark skin conference, speaking with two young ladies. One is from Belize, and the other one is from Trinidad and Tobago, talking about how when being dark skin and pretty is not enough, because one of them was speaking to me about – she's talking to me about she said her pretty girl privilege within the black community wasn't enough because of some events that happened, and I told her it was really important to get this story out to the people. So we're going to be doing a live webinar where people can actually, they can interact tomorrow, and that information is on Facebook. If they go to my name and type it in, I got all these events going on. So, yeah, and then also the book, A Dark Skinned Woman's Revenge, because some people cannot make it to see the play. They want to know what it's all about. If you read, the book is available. You just go to my website, darkskinisbeautifulcampaign.com, and it's right there. So, yeah. And also, I just want to say, I know I'm going and talking, but also I want the people to know that in doing these productions, it costs me money, a lot of money to do. And people want me to come here, they want me to come. So I do have a GoFundMe going to, if people want to contribute to the production of play, they can go and they can donate. And I want to say thank you to all of the people that have donated to the campaign, because they've helped make a lot of things happen. So I want to thank them. So, yeah.
I want to bid you nothing but divine intervention, beloved. And have a beautiful, beautiful day. I thank you kindly from my heart. And I thank the caller who called in. Please follow the show. At the end of the show, you can hear it replayed in about 10 minutes and follow the show. Hit the follow button. I really need your statistics. So, again, we want to bid you farewell and thank you kindly. Hotep, Chicago. Hotep, world. Peace and blessings.
All right. Thank you.